Welcome to the Real News Network. I'm Greg Wilpert in Arlington, Virginia. For over a week now, Iraq has been engulfed in massive protests. The demonstrators are demanding income and bread, as they say, and the government's police and military are violently repressing the protests. State forces have shot live ammunition at demonstrators, killing more than 100 and injuring over 6,000, according to Iraq's own interior ministry. Also, the government imposed an internet blackout and raided several media outlets, severely hampering media coverage of the protests. Despite the repression, the government is also seeking to appease protesters by making far-reaching promises for improved social programs. On Tuesday, Prime Minister Adel Abdul Mahdi issued a 13-point reform plan promising subsidies and housing for the poor, as well as educational programs for unemployed youth. Parliament Speaker Mohammed Al-Halbousi also announced new legislation in response to the protests.
To recognize civilian and security casualties of protest as martyrs, and therefore their families will be compensated, and so will the wounded. To follow the investigation procedures to uncover the events that have affected the protesters, and to release all prisoners immediately. Establishing a monetary grant to the Employment Development Program. It will be funded by the Labor and Social Affairs Ministry until a fund is established to employ the unemployed students and develop them, which would be included in the 2020 federal budget. I am calling on the House to vote for the decisions taken to be established in the 2020 budget. It has been approved.
Joining me now to analyze what is going on in Iraq is Sabah al-Nasseri. He was born in Basra, Iraq, and teaches Middle East politics and economics at the Political Science Department at York University, Toronto, Canada. Thanks for joining us again, Sabah.
Good to be with you, Greg.
So after the U.S. forces invaded Iraq and dismantled Saddam Hussein's Ba'ath Party, the U.S. government sought to address Iraq's ethnic divisions with a system known as Muhasasa, which allocates quotas for each ethnic group or religious faction for jobs in the government. Now, some of the protests seem to have been focused mainly on their opposition to this Muhasasa system. Now, why is that? And is this really the main reason behind the protests?
Greg, I think at the core of the current protest is a class war. But in order to understand the difference of the current protest movement and the significance of it for the next few days, weeks, And we need to recap three sets of events since last year. The first one was the election in May last year, where, as I argued on the Real News, both Iran and the U.S. actually lost the election because they betted on different horses. And the Sayeron list, which is a combination of the Communist Party and the Sadrist movement, won actually the election. But what happened after that, the problem was, of course, it was the least turnout since 15 years. So most of the young people didn't vote. So you can see since last year, there were a problem with the election and the outcome of the election. But not only in the problem with the formation of the government, but even until today, some of the ministerial posts, like the education ministry, are not filled because all these blocs and lists and parties want to have their candidate. They want to push through their candidates. So this Muhasasa, or power-sharing, ethno-sectarian power-sharing formula of the U.S. is destroying the whole political system. That was the first set of events. The second set of events happened actually in the last 3 months when the conflict between the U.S. and Iran escalated. And there were some suspicions and doubts that the oil tankers in the Gulf, but even Aramco in Saudi Arabia, the last attack on them, were actually from Iraq. Militias that are the military arms of Iran and Iraq actually launched these attacks. So there was a pressure on Adel Abdel Mahdi from the United States to restructure the militias, the so-called Popular Mobilization Unit, the PMUs, to be under the jurisdiction of the Interior Ministry. For the first time since 16 years, since the occupation of Iraq, an army general, in a way, became so popular among the population, they feared he might be a crystallization figure in a coup against these Shiite parties and so on. So they have to dismantle it. This, now we come to the third set of events. This triggered a bit of protest in the eastern and northeastern provinces of Iraq. But the other movement was the resignation of the Minister of Health in Iraq. He was an expert and a decent guy, and he tried actually to reform the health ministry. But he resigned a few weeks after he was nominated because he was saying there was a lot of corruption and he was threatened. They went on the street in protest in Iraq, especially in Baghdad, protesting the current situation, the unemployment, and the devaluation of this of their knowledge and graduation, etc. They were met with a brutal force of the interior ministries and some of the militias of the Al-Hashd al-Sha'bi or the PMUs, young men and women. So a lot of people in Iraq were outraged to see how these young graduates were humiliated in front of the whole Iraqi people. And after that, a few days after that, in Baghdad, the biggest chunk of the population live in the so-called shanty towns or the slums of Baghdad. A million of people live in the slums. They are extremely poor, unemployed, day laborer, etc. Their slums or shanty houses, in a way, were dismantled by the government, and most of them were poor street vendors. Their properties, be it a car or whatever, were confiscated. We should remember that about 50% of the Iraqi population are under 24, and the unemployment rate among the young people in Iraq are more than 40%, double the national average of the employment in Iraq. So these young people, unemployed, poor, graduate, without any future, without any support, without any social benefits or housing and so on, when they saw these scenes, they start mobilizing on the social media to stage a spontaneous protest without leadership or party support or any political or religious movement in Iraq.
So the Iraq parliament recently also passed a law that recognizes the casualties and the people that had died in the protests as martyrs or shuhada in Arabic. Now, this carries a significant economic reward because the families of martyrs are compensated, but it also carries a religious meaning because shuhada means people who in their death honor God. Does that mean that the parliament is and the government, in effect, is recognizing the protests as being somehow justified? And do you think that this would appease the protests?
Appease the protests? No. Because such promises were made in 2015 and 2011 and 2006 and 7 and so on. The same promises to initiate, you know, some social project, housing project, employment project, to create, you know, industrial, agriculture, commercial, public-supported project to employ the young graduate people. It didn't happen. And I think the parliament and the government were taken by surprise by these protests, because normally, and that's the difference between this protest movement and the previous one, normally protest movements are supported by either religious or political figures or blocs like Palestinian and Sadrs, or the Al-Hawza, the religious institution in Najaf, or by the current secular movement like the Communist Party or the civil current in Iraq. This time around, none of these movements nor the religious institution were actually supporting nor they knew about this protest movement. That's why everybody was taken by surprise. And this explained to the brute force, the I would call a state terror, because the way this protest movement were brutally attacked and massacred
So Saba, what do you think is going to happen next in Iraq? That is, how do these protests also fit into the regional context? That is, we've seen protests happening in Egypt, Algeria, and Sudan, which we've covered here at the Real News Network in the past 2 weeks or so. But have these protests, movements in the area, had an impact on what's happening in Iraq? And also, is there anything else going on in the region that would be affecting what's happening in Iraq?
All right, these are three questions. The first one is in regard to the current protest movement in Iraq and what will happen next. What's happening now, there are protests, but all the medias and the newspapers and everything were intimidated, and some of them were actually, some of the offices were destroyed and equipments were confiscated so that they will not cover the protests. And the ongoing arrest and incarceration of the activists and the protesters is going on. So beside, you know, at the same time where the government making promises to the protesters, actually using a very harsh hand against the protester. And this is because of two reasons, I think. The first one is tomorrow. Tomorrow is the FIFA World Cup game between Iraq and Hong Kong, two countries witnessing protests at the same time. It will be in Basra, in the southern of Iraq. So I assume the protester would use this event, A, to make the world aware of the protest in Iraq, and B, to mobilize people to use this event against the government. And the second and the most important one for the Shiite parties and Shiite militias in Iraq and by extension Iran is on the 19th of October, next week, there will be the Shiite religious observance, the 40th day of the commemoration of the death of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Muhammad. And this is one of the biggest religious event in Iraq, and they expect up to 5 million people to come, 5 million Shiite, to come to Najaf and Karbala in Iraq from all over the world. So they want to make sure that they quash the protest before this event happened, because they assume, and rightly so, that the protester would use these religious ceremonies and rituals and so on to turn it into the government and make people even more aware of the protest. So that's why the harsh hand of the state against the protester. The second thing, yes, you see, there are many protest movements in the wider Middle East, in Sudan, in Egypt, on the 20th of September, for instance, in Algeria, in Lebanon, etc. And of course, the young people in Iraq, you know, the new generation of the social media, they are aware of this movement and of the success of this movement. If you look at Sudan and Algeria, they were relatively successful, especially in Sudan, by bringing down the al-Bashir regime. So people are empowered that they can do, you know, a peaceful transformation, a radical transformation of the system. The third thing, of course, you know, these protest movements come at a time where you have an escalation of conflicts in the region between Iran and the United States, between Israel and Iran, between you know, the Gulf countries themselves and the war in Yemen. So for Iran, it's a matter of survival to have Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, and Yemen in order to manage the crisis, the serious crisis Iran is going through because of the sanction. So Iran is trying to create a crisis in Iraq, in Lebanon or Syria and Yemen, and escalate the conflict in order to manage the serious crisis in Iran. So any protest at this time against the government in Iraq, the allies of Iran, create, you know, a dangerous and a threatening scenario for Iran to cope with these developments in the region. So yes, I expect things probably will intensify the next few days and weeks.
And finally, would you say that this is what's happening here in Iraq is sort of a second wave of the 2011 Arab Spring? I mean, especially given that this is all happening in so many different regions. And I mean, in Iraq, it never really caught on in the first place, if I remember correctly. But still, I mean, it looks like just the fact that it's been such a regional conflict, or that is a regional movement, really. Could this be considered a second wave?
Yeah, not 2011, but 2015, with a time lag of 4 years, you had more than 1 million people in Baghdad alone occupying the green zone in the parliament. And at that time, the government made promises, but, you know, as usual, nothing happened. And yes, I mean, if we think about the few days before the protests started, you know, remember Bouazizi in Tunisia in 2011, the poor working class street vendor, you know, whose existence was destroyed and humiliated publicly, which triggered actually the Arab Revolution. The same thing happened in Iraq a few days, as I said, before the protest movement started. The poor people in the slums of Baghdad were displaced. Their existence was destroyed because most of them are street vendors. So they, in a way, triggered this class conflict, and the state, of course, reacted with a class war. So yes, you can say this is an Arab Revolution part two or something, though I always look at the Arab Revolution as a process, and I was saying what we witnessed in 2011 is just the first act of the revolution and not the final one.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there, but I'm sure we'll come back to you again as the situation develops. I was speaking to Sabah Al-Nasseri, Associate Professor of Political Science at York University. Thanks again, Sabah, for having joined us today.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
And thank you for joining the Real News Network.
Hey, y'all. My name is Tharna Noor, and I'm a climate crisis reporter here at The Real News Network. This is a crucial moment for humanity and for the planet. So if you like what we do, please support us by subscribing at the link below. Thank you.